Welcome to season 7 of the XYZ Experiment podcast. We are all in the studio together today. So Fiona, Luke and myself. Hi guys.
Hi.
We wanted to talk about the fact that there is a lot of uncertainty and stress globally that is happening. And as we get older, we also pick up on the fact that life is uncertain and stressful. And so we thought, let's chat about uncertainty and stress and how we deal with it and how we cope with it.
Or not.
And, oh God, I have so many stories about this. But I guess for me, when I first really started to experience uncertainty and stress was when I was in my 20s. And so for me, a lot of it is around like when you get a test or when you get, when there's something wrong with you, your body, and you're waiting to find out what the heck is wrong with you. And that period of waiting, which can range from sometimes a short amount of time if you've got a really good doctor, to sometimes a couple of weeks, to, I know people who've lived with that uncertainty of going, what is wrong with my body, for like years. That can be incredibly disconcerting, I think. And so, you know, I think about it with my MS diagnosis. Endometriosis was, in the scheme of things, relatively quick. Type 1 was relatively quick because it could have died. But all of these other little things that happen to you. And one of the strategies I realized I started to put into play was to count down from 5. Every time I started to think about, oh my God, what is the test result going to say? Or what, you know, when am I going to hear from the doctor? Or when, what's happening? And so I would count down, and Scott would say, sometimes you'd hear me do it out loud and he'd be like, why is she quite like walking around the house going 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then start again. But it was a way to almost like redirect my mind to counting. And so that was like, I guess, yeah, a specific kind of set of circumstances, but I actually count down from 5 a lot. I probably daily will have a practice of counting down from 5, and no one taught me that, but I just did it.
I was going to ask, where did you learn that from? How did that start?
I think I probably started it in my PhD, actually, when I was quite stressed, and I developed all these weird, quirky habits, like I wouldn't, when I'm walking on the pavement, I wouldn't step on lines. Mm-hmm. But 3 just seemed too short, and 5 seemed like a good pacing number to kind of get me to go 5, 4. And then sometimes I'd change up the pace of like how quickly I'd do it. My biggest thing is I hold my breath often when I'm stressed. And so it would be breathing through the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, which I think is in the exhale, which I have now learned is good. Like if you do a long exhale, apparently it's a calming thing on your body. I don't know if that's true. Luke can tell us if that's true. Inhale and then a long exhale. So no one taught me it that I can consciously remember, but I probably started doing it when I was studying my PhD. Oh no, because I was diagnosed with MS before that. So it would have been MS related. When the first time I was having MRIs, mm-hmm. I was just counting down from 5 in the MRI.
Does it work every time, that strategy, or does it sometimes not serve you? Like,
it's only one strategy I have in my toolkit. So I can tell you other strategies, but I do want to hear from you guys. But that's probably my go-to strategy when I'm on my own and I need something really fast.
Because one of the things that immediately I'm thinking about is a generational thing. And I'm thinking, you being a Gen Y millennial, the strategies that you're taught, or if you're allowed to show that you're stressed or acknowledge it, you know, because I know with different generations, that's quite different in the way it's reflected. So, yeah, I'm really interested to know if you are stressed like that, like will you show people that? Like does your husband know or your family know, or, you know, is it something that you share, or is it something that keep to yourself, or like internalise it? Or
I'm not an internaliser because I'm a verbal processor.
Okay. Yeah.
To the detriment, I think, sometimes to my poor friends and family. Yeah, so I definitely do talk about it.
Okay.
But I do feel I'm getting much more conscious of how my body holds stress.
Yes.
And so I know I stiffen up, I spasm more. they often say, like, you raise your shoulders, like, your shoulders come up to your ears and you'll hold yourself quite tight. Yes, I talk to people quite a lot, and, you know, Scott and I obviously talk all the time, but I do have different groups of people depending on what the stress is. And so if it's work stress, there's a different group of people versus if it's, like, health stress or if it's family stress or if it's whatever it might be, because I do love to, like, make sense of stuff through talking.
Yes. Okay. Going to you, Luke, I feel that your generation might, are they better at coping with stress, or are they just better at verbalizing it or expressing it? I'm just really interested.
I think that, you know, generally speaking, my generation is really good at articulating how they're feeling. I think that, you know, maybe older generations where that hasn't been something that's been as accepted, they see that as weakness or as some indication that they're not as effective or, you know, in quotations, built for doing certain types of work. But then when you look at certain generations and the way that they, and Dash, you know, did a really good job of just articulating that, they hold stress in their body and you can see it. Even the way they talk, the tone, the content, the language they're using, you can see that is some form of, like, stress manifestation.
Yeah.
And so I think that my generation's really kind of pretty good at articulating it. I think they've also, generally speaking, got a pretty good grasp of techniques to help with reducing stress. And talking about stress is one of those techniques as well. So I think that, generally speaking, my generation's pretty good in that sense. In terms of, like, the broad concept of uncertainty, I wouldn't be surprised if this is, like, a pre-existing quote, but I think the only thing you can be certain of in life is uncertainty. That is, you know, when I was listening to Dash, I was trying to think of some real times of uncertainty in my life, but every year that I look back on, there's something. There's always ongoing uncertainty for everyone. It's just about how much attention you put into it, right? How much value you put in that uncertainty impacting you personally, I think. And with that in mind, my role, what I'm studying, is learning techniques to reduce stress, and stress is often a component of fixating on uncertainty. In terms of techniques that I've been utilizing recently, what I used to do a lot was talk to myself. That was something
with your pacing.
Yeah, pacing and talking to myself. That was a big thing for me, because it means that you're mind has to slow down to the pace of your talking, and it helps you process things. And by the time you've talked out an issue, you know, there's that saying that that's 50% of the problem solved, is just being able to articulate and understand why it's bothering you and what it means to you. I've now started using a completely different technique over the last couple months. And this technique is around, it's coming from, like, a therapeutic modality called acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT. I'm not sure if I've talked about this before, but as opposed to, you know, it's a type of cognitive behavioral therapy where we're looking at restructuring thoughts. But with ACT, it's actually more about just accepting those thoughts exist and figuring out strategies to just let that thought exist, not give it much attention, and instead just refocus on your values. And so no matter what's going on in the world, even if it feels quite enticing and, like, it can pull you away from what's really important to you, you can actually just keep moving in line with what's important to you.
Yeah.
And one of those techniques that I've been using a lot that, you know, I'm not sure if it'll work for everyone, but I've actually found surprisingly a lot of success with it, is this technique called Leaves in the Wind, where basically when I start thinking a lot and I'm going down that rabbit hole of thoughts connecting to other thoughts, and you're starting to feel that physiological reaction that comes from those thoughts, I just start envisioning my thoughts as leaves on a tree and then watching them floating away in the wind. And just kind of imagining that, I've found it a really, really calming way to kind of ground myself and just remember that all these thoughts, you know, you have thousands of thoughts a day, and as soon as you stop, and again, I'm not saying it's easy, but as soon as you stop kind of giving them that value of keeping them under the microscope, they don't hold any weight, and they can be quite transient, and they can just float away in the wind.
So is this a technique to stop you spiraling?
It's just a technique to keep you in the present.
Yeah.
Because again, the idea is that with uncertainty that leads to stress or anxiety or low mood, depression, you're starting to go into experiences that will pull you away from what you want to be doing. The only way that you can act in a way that is, you know, connected to your values and your goals is by being in the present moment and always consciously making those choices that keep you going that way. And so it's just a really simple technique to stop you from, spiraling, to stop you from, you know, overthinking, from going in a different direction that you might be pulled towards. Yeah.
Can I ask a question, though, as someone who's studying at the moment, compared to studying now versus studying, say, an undergrad, do you still get stressed at things like assignments and assessment tasks that you might have due, or is that something that has changed in terms of how it impacts you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And again, I think that going back to that concept of uncertainty, there'll always be a space of uncertainty in your life. It just is up to you what you decide to put in that box that will fill the uncertainty box. Because for me now, going into a course where it's just pass or fail, there's no marks, I don't really feel any stress related to that uncertainty necessarily. But now that I'm working with real clients, the uncertainty of working with clients and seeing if I'm actually helping or not, that could, if I allow it to, that could be something that I get really preoccupied with. So it can be anything. It really can. You just decide what's now the most important thing that you're uncertain about.
What about you, Fiona?
Yeah.
So being my generation, we hold it all in for years. And because we were taught by the, you know, baby boomers and the silent generations, and you don't show any weakness at all. And so I grew up with that, you know, and the thought of seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist was like scandalous.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I told my mum I was going to go, she was horrified. And not because she doesn't want me to see somebody, but just back then it's not what you did, you know, that was for not, as far as she's concerned, not for someone like me. But now, of course, you know, it's just a generational thing. The one thing I was thinking about as you guys were talking, and my generation has learnt now to actually share those experiences. And I've got a lot of friendships from when I was a teenager, some very, very good friends. And I was recently back in Perth and had a big night at someone's house where we just talked and talked and talked for hours, you know, there was four of us. And we've been friends since we were 17. And so when we were at that age, we didn't sort of share that sort of stuff. And then you have your own life for the next 20 or 30 years, and you have kids and you have families and you get married, and there's lots of stress, and we didn't really talk about that. But now in our 50s, those friendship bonds have become deeper than ever, because we're sharing that vulnerability now and our things we're worried about and we're frightened about, which we never used to do younger. Like, and I would tell you they're my best friends. But it was incredible to me on this evening when we were all just sitting there, because it's very rare we're all together, because one person was from Tasmania, you know, I came from Melbourne, there was two from Perth. It was quite extraordinary how I was looking at them thinking, wow, these friendships have really, really deepened, because we're really sharing, you know, stuff that we're worried about and we're stressed about. And we, of course, talked about menopause, we talked about our marriages, talked about our careers, but not like in glowing terms, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was just like where we were at. And I feel my generation is definitely learning to be a lot better at that. But that's got a little bit, it's also, is it a great thing? Because a lot of us are looking back on our lives going, oh, like I could have done things so much better, or even that produces a little bit of stress, you know. Why have I gone in that direction? I'm now heading towards 60 and I could have done things a bit better, and why'd I let that stress me out? And but the big thing for me with dealing with stress was my husband, who is very good at dealing with stress. He's unbelievable. Yeah, he's incredible at dealing with stress. And I used to own a number of dental surgeries, and I used to lose sleep at night time worrying about things. And one day he said to me, He sat me down and he said to me, look, is there something you can do about this right now? If there's something you can do about it, then get out of bed and do it. Like, just solve this problem right now. And but if there is not anything you can do about it, then get some sleep and forget about it, because mm-hmm. there is nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that all the time now. Mm. If I have something that's really stressing me out or really worrying me or in the back of my mind, I actually in my own head go, is there something I can do about it right now? And if there is, I do it. And if there's not, I actually let it go. Maybe it's like your leave thing. I just let it go thinking, okay, there's nothing I can do about that.
I have a similar thing. Like, I'm like, when I am up and it's like 3 a.m. in the morning and I'm like stewing on something, I'm just like, this is counterproductive. Yeah. Everything seems like a disaster at 3 a.m. in the morning. Everything.
It does.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, I just kind of say, wait for the dawn and revisit this.
Yeah. It's interesting when you're talking about cutting back from five, because recently I've been using a technique quite a lot where I actually go through the alphabet and I'll go, okay, I'm going to name a country for every letter of the alphabet, and I'll go, you know, Australia, Brazil, Canada, and I go right through the alphabet and I'll go, oh, okay, now I'm going to go through women's names and I'll say a whole lot of women's names, or I'll go through men's names, or I'll go through fruit and vegetables. I know that sounds weird. I'm always thinking of topics I can go from A to Z, particularly if I'm in bed trying to get to sleep and I'm asleep by the time I get to N or O. Mm-hmm. Like I'm, because I learned somewhere about it just resets your brain a little bit to do that. And so I've been using that quite a lot as a, I think it's very similar to your 5-4-3, but I don't verbalise it. It's in my head.
Mm.
But sometimes it's incredible how it takes me away from something. Like the other day I was doing fruit and veg in my head, and then I got to H and I'm going, oh, what's a fruit and veg for H? What is one? And I thought about it for ages and go, oh, honeydew, okay. Yeah. And it's just taken me completely away from what I was stressing about. I know that sounds really strange. And I know there's some nights when it sounds like I do it all the time. I don't. But there's some nights when I'm doing it and, you know, I'll go, okay, now I'm going to think of two countries per letter this time. And I know that when I get to X, there's no country for X, and that's okay. Or I'll get up in the morning and I'll go, I couldn't think of something for that letter. I'll just have a quick look to see what I can. So next time if I do that, I've got something for that letter. That's one of my strategies.
And it's, there are like, in terms of like strategies like this, I think there are three main different types. There's distract, diffuse, defer.
Yeah.
And I think that those are really good distractions.
Yeah.
Where it just takes you away from that thought entirely, but it still does something to preoccupy your mind.
Yeah, it does.
And
it
was interesting, the one that you said around names and thinking of a name for every letter of the alphabet, that's a really like common one that people use.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
So is defer us saying we're not going to think about this anymore at 3 a.m. in the morning?
Exactly. Defer is saying, you know what, from the time of like 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., I will think about all these things and I can stew on them for that entire period. But then once it hits 8:31, I'm no longer thinking about it.
Can I just say how my dad dealt with stress? Because that's another thing that came into my head. My dad's a silent generation. We know we've had him on this podcast. So my dad said this all the time, this too will pass. That was his absolute saying. And then maybe last year or the year before, I saw a whole thing about how dangerous people are who say this too will pass, because they're so good at dealing with stress and coping. I can't tell you the number of times my father would say that, this too will pass.
But that's so interesting, because my parents used to say that about us as teenagers.
Yeah.
They'd say it to our faces, this too will pass. And I was like, thanks. But I was also like, are you dealing with it? Or are you just waiting? Is it a passive thing or an active thing?
I thought it was like is it diffusion? Like, he's just calming the situation down.
And I think and that's another really important, and that's where diffusion comes in, is this concept of if you want to, as we were saying, it will pass. The uncertainty regarding a test or a certain point in life will pass. And you can spend that entire period wrangling it and wrestling with it. And then it passes and you go, cool, that's over. But there's always going to be something else that will then take your attention. And so sometimes it's actually about just letting your attention be in the present moment and letting those things pass. But then there are also times where being practical and pragmatic about it, getting up and doing something to change, or you need to actively distract yourself while you wait for intense feelings or thoughts to kind of simmer to the point where you can diffuse from them, they're also really helpful as well.
Mm. it's interesting because I've had like a really like full-on week at work, some of it incredibly positive and some of it like not so great. And one of my mentors, who doesn't work in the same organization but has been a mentor for a long time, she just like, I don't know, had a spidey sense and rang me one morning this week. And she was just like, oh, just ringing to check in. And then she said, oh, how are you? And then I was like, then telling her stuff. And then she said, do not give this air or energy.
Yeah.
Do not give this air or energy. And she said, like, do what you have to do, but do not give this air or energy. You have other massive, big, exciting things happening. Do not let this distract you from that. And I was just like, wow. Okay. Yep. That's really good.
You needed to hear that.
I really needed to hear that. And then I've said it to like all these other people who are experiencing like lots of work stress stuff. Mm. And it's just like, you can't control everything. And so do not give this air or energy. Let it go. And I was like, that's really good.
Generally speaking, if we would just use that concept of when you're dealing with uncertainty, you're dealing with stress. It sounds like, because if we were just to use those three ideas of distracting yourself from it, diffusing from it, or deferring the worry, would you say that normally you're in the distract way of dealing with it?
I think I was a lot in my 20s. I think it depends on what it is. Like, I was just thinking about heaps of the global news stuff that has been happening. I have... And it used to come up on my social media feeds. I've realized now the longer you stay on a story in your social media feed, the more the algorithm then sends you more stories like that, right? So I started to go, okay, I don't want to see those stories. I'm going to flick right through them. But that doesn't mean I don't engage with them. I do engage with those stories, but by trusted journalists and by trusted news sources in a time when I feel mentally okay to. And so I'm deferring a lot more. Like, I'm like, okay, I do need to understand what's going on globally, but I'm not going to do that at 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm not going to do that just before I go to bed. I'm not going to do that first thing when I wake up, because that's going to be not great for my stress levels. And so I'm going to do that. And there's just a few sources. So I absolutely love this podcast, to give them a shout out, Not Stupid with Jeremy Fernandez and Julia Baird. They're both beautiful journalists and have done so much reporting, but how they've reported on all of the stuff that's been happening globally is so well considered, and it's not about like scaring the shit out of you. And so I think I'm just like, I'll just wait for their podcast to drop on a Wednesday afternoon, and I'm just going to listen to their 30-minute take on this and move on.
Yeah. What about you, Fee?
I used to do a lot of distract. But recently I've been doing a lot of diffuse. So there's a few things that have happened to me that I've thought I've got to take some action to do this, and been really worried about even taking that action, about how people's response will be to it and things like that. And then finally just doing it, going, I've got to do it. And then the response is great. It's just... And then you learn each time, oh, I'll just make that phone call, or I'll just send that email. And... yeah, I feel like I'm coping a lot better with the stress of that, like by doing that. I think the hardest thing for me sometimes, and I think a lot of people are like this, is but leaving it to the last moment as well, maybe that's not such a great thing. Mm. And sometimes I'm like that. I leave it to like, you know, the 11th hour, and then all of a sudden I solve it. But I think I do a lot of things like that. Like, you know, if I've... I seem to thrive on the energy of being in the, I don't know, the adrenaline inducing, you've got to do it by tomorrow. And so, and then do it very well because of that.
I was going to ask, because sometimes you can do the diffuse too early too.
Yeah, true.
Like when you haven't, like for me, yeah. I feel like there's times, and that's maybe why I also think I defer, because I defer my diffusement.
Yeah.
Because I've just been like, take a breath, take a breath to process and think about this, and don't react in anger or don't react in like a particular way. And I'm trying. I'm not perfect at it. I'm absolutely not perfect at it. But I think my response had been sometimes to diffuse too much in the moment.
Okay. So that's that concept about being on the dance floor and not on the balcony, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. looking down on it. It's yeah. hard to get off the dance floor sometimes, though. It's and give really yourself hard.
That space.
Yeah, to give yourself that space. It really is hard.
But what do you do, Luke, of those three?
Definitely a lot of distracting, I would say, as well. And distracting, again, there's a reason why we do it, because it's effective.
Mm.
But I think that was, generally speaking, leading to a lot of like exhaustion as well, because it is quite cognitively draining to be distracting yourself from what could be just ongoing worries forever, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And so learning how to diffuse from them is really important, because it really helps with like reactivity later on. It isn't just like the same level of intensity is coming up and then you're having to distract yourself from it. Like, it's actually reduces quite significantly, which I've found. And diffusion has been a really big thing that I've been working on in like the last 6 months. And I think the impact of it has been really like astounding. Like, I've found that in terms of being very reactionary, it's reduced significantly. It's a lot easier to do things like defer and distract, because you don't need to be putting as much energy into it to make it work. So I think, yep, distraction definitely really useful, and something I was doing a lot, definitely early 20s, lot of distraction, and trying to like justify the distraction being like, oh, I'm writing about my issues. So there's some form of like productivity associated with it as well. But diffusion, I've found, has actually been the most successful in actually achieving what you'd want, which is to be not as attached to those thoughts and uncertainties.
And so would you define diffusion more as diffusing yourself versus diffusing the situation?
Well, the way that I view it is that, and I think this is the way that it would probably be explained as well, is that you've got uncertainty in the world, you've got things you can think about in the world, and when you find something that you're putting a lot of attention to, like the state of the world or the outcome of a test, for example, you fuse with it.
Mm.
You fuse with the thought and it becomes something that is just in your brain kind of on a loop. And the more you're fused with it, the stronger that thought becomes, because you've been thinking about it so much, your brain thinks, okay, this is for whatever reason helpful, so I'm going to continually think about it. And then it becomes really hard to separate yourself from that thought.
Yeah.
And so the idea behind diffusion is, again, grounding yourself and allowing yourself to acknowledge that thought, because obviously if you try to not think about something, you'll think about it even more. But learning the art of that thought existing, because it always will, but just letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
The concept keeps coming up in my mind about whether you think you can or you can't, you're right, both ways. And it's almost a bit like that with stress as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, you know, that you can create whatever you want in your brain about what's going on in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, and you build your belief around that. And so it's about trying to have that better belief, if that makes sense. Yeah, make that your reality. Helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's like Brené Brown often kind of talks about, you know, we tell ourselves stories about different things, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess it's like then rewriting that story of that event, bringing in some of the values or your own values or kind of coping mechanisms that you might need to kind of then get through to a part where you might either be able to act on something or do something about it or just let it go, because there's a lot we can't do right now about things that are happening. And so, yeah, it's interesting times we live in. Hi everyone, it's Dash. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the XYZ Experiment podcast, and don't forget to leave a rating and a review. If you've enjoyed our show and like what you're hearing, tell all your friends and family and hit that subscribe button. If you want to hear our updates and know when episodes drop, follow us on Instagram at the XYZ Experiment for all the latest updates and news. And our original music was composed and performed by the amazing Luke Champion.